silver blasted to within earshot of $18, closing at the highest point in about a year, while the XAU Shares Index ended with a 100% gain this week over the last 3 months. Welcome to Gold Seek Radio, everyone. Your host, Chris Walczyk, back with you primed for another big episode. Well, it was another remarkable week for precious metals investors. Gold shares, as I mentioned, close at the highest point in about a year and a half, while silver played catch up with gold, which has already posted one of its best moves in years. Joining me with their insights on the market, two industry insiders, starting with Bob Hoy, senior investment strategist at Institutional Advisors. He outlines his latest forecasts for the yellow metal and silver, as well as their shares, plus the stock indexes. Then Bob points out that during deflationary episodes, 80% of the time, gold real money has yielded stunning returns. And my next guest, Peter Grandich, out of the bullpen with his latest comments on U.S. equities and the precious metals sector. He expects the yellow metal to continue to shine this year amid increased global geopolitical tensions and improved demand and limited supply. He likes the fact that each wave of selling is followed by even stronger rallies. Then Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest report. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. Gold finished near the break-even point at $12.33 an ounce on Friday, but silver rallied on nearly $1.80, 5% for the week, closing over $17 an ounce, almost touching $18, the best close in about a year. The precious metal shares also red hot for the third week running, adding about 3 points, 4% closing at 81. And West Texas Intermediate crude added $2, nearly 5%, finishing at $43.75 a barrel, a remarkable advance, and maybe primed for further gains. The top story pushing the precious metal sector higher this week, according to one leading investment bank, silver could blast to $20 in this rally. According to one media report, silver has outperformed gold in 9 of the last 11 trading sessions. Bullion holdings in silver ETF climbed 4 consecutive days to about 20,000 tons, according to a Bloomberg report. Meanwhile, head of the well-known Tocqueville Gold Fund, TGLDX, John Hathaway noted he wouldn't be surprised to see all-time new highs in this precious metal cycle, but he did qualify it, and I think that's responsible, that this could require a few years. I share his outlook, and I like his time frame. Several top money managers concurred, including Frank Holmes of U.S. Global Investors Gold and Precious Metals Fund, USERX, and Tom Windmill, who manages the Midas Fund, MIDSX. John Hathaway made the comment that this push by policymakers into digital money, added to the negative interest rates we're seeing around the world, is directing investor funds right into the precious metals sector. There's just simply very few safe havens left, he says. The investors also noted that liquid inventories of physical gold have been depleted and that the float has declined by nearly 67%. And as equities investors know, when the float is low, the shares tend to move abruptly. The investors suggested 5 or more gold or silver company components in any portfolio for diversification. They like Rand Source Gold, G-O-L-D, Oceana Gold, O-C-A-N-F, and Rio Tinto, R-I-O, as well as Klondex Mines, C-L-D-X, a potential takeover candidate they mentioned, which has a big investment by Franco-Nevada, F-N-V, which sports a solid track record of finding great smaller companies. And they suggested investing in junior gold miners, the ETF G-D-X-J, and of course then the bullion ETF Sprott Physical Gold Trust, PHYS, from our friends at Sprott Asset Management, has lower long-term capital gain issues. And according to John Hathaway, the ideal ownership is simply buying the bullion, and he parks his money where his words emerge, with about 14% of his total wealth in physical gold. Precious metals, bottom line. What a remarkable 2016 for the precious metals and the XAU. As I mentioned, flying sky high. I'd expect the herd to maybe make a pause here in the coming weeks for a much-needed rest to build up that strength necessary to advance to 1850 silver, and perhaps even 20 there, and then on gold, 13 to 1400. Moving on to the Wall Street report, The blue chips, Dow Jones Industrials on the New York Stock Exchange, added another 106 points, 0.5%, closing at 18,003. The S&P 500 picked up 11 points, 0.5%, ending at 2092 for the week, while the NASDAQ bucked the trend, dropping 32 over 0.5 percentage point at 4,900 for the week. The big news pushing equities higher, crude oil has had a solid rally lately. Of course, the S&P and Dow components fared well from expectations of higher earnings on higher oil prices. The news from the U.S. Energy Information Administration noted that crude output had declined for the sixth consecutive week. Lower supply increases demand, boosting price. The EIA report indicated that domestic crude output fell by 24,000 barrels per day, down to about 9 million for the week, according to one media source. Also, the EIA reported that U.S. commercial crude oil inventories are lower than expected, and the distillate fuel inventories and motor gasoline inventories dropped sharply, too. The news sent the Energy Select ETF, XLE, into orbit. It's the biggest gainer among the S&P 500 sectors. The Dow components, Chevron, CVX, Exxon, XOM, and Schlumberger all added about 1 to 1.5% for the week, while Pioneer Natural Gas, PXD, Chesapeake Corporation, CHK, and Halliburton, HAL, advanced about 2%, 5%, and 1% respectively, all solid gains. Plus, better than expected earnings results from the financial institution was a big plus for the market. The Dow and the S&P reached their highest levels in nearly a year on news that Discover Financial Services, DFS, added 8%. On topping analyst expectations, the financial service sector, XLFS, the ETF there, advanced over 1.5%. In addition, BOA, Bank of America, BAC, and Wells Fargo, WFC, and Citigroup, C, on average about 2% for the week. Bottom line on Wall Street. Market volatility as seen in the CBOT VIX remains supportive. However, the Fear and Greed Index remain at very high, overvalued levels here. Although we'll likely see a retest of the former highs, cannot advocate chasing shares at these overextended levels. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek Radio with our three big guests. We'd like for you to stay with us right here. The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity. Brazil Resources, based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves. Industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. And founding director, their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
Gold Seek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome back Bob Hoy, editor and chief investment strategist of InstitutionalAdvisors.com.
Well, Chris, always good to talk with you and your listeners. The best way to describe our work is, number one, the research was based upon a very extensive review of the history of financial markets, wherever and as far back as I could go. In biblical terms, of course, there's nothing new under the sun, and there's really nothing new under the sun when it comes to financial markets. It's all been tried before, driven by emotions, fear and greed, greed at the top and fear at the bottom. And the evidence out there goes way back in history, and the number one conclusion one would have is that we're in a world where everyone or most players think that the central banks have huge influence and policymakers have a huge influence. Over time, they have because they've, with their weird theories, have depreciated the dollar, purchasing power of the dollar from when the Fed opened its doors in 1914 down to about 3 cents, I think, the last time I saw it. But on the ordinary business cycle, they've got no influence. And one, people are going to speculate in something the people choose, not the central bank. So this then gets us into a major problem about central banks and their influence. But then just to sort of summarize the other part is that it's one thing to have a model where you're expecting a rally in metals or not a rally in metals. But when you have a forecast like we had for a seasonal low in metal prices and crude oil for some time around December, I mean, it could have been late November, it could have been early January, but as it turns out. And then you get a rebound out to perhaps around April. That then is a forecast. So then when you get there, you then come in with, well, let's just back up to January. Was the market down when it should be? Yes. Were there signs of distress in the market? Yes, there was. So we had one model we use is called a capitulation model, and we were getting downside capitulation in, for example, crude oil. And so that confirms that it's bad when it should be bad, and then here going the other way now, we're up approximately the window when one would expect up. And things are getting pretty heady. We're getting upside readings on definitely on silver, definitely on silver stocks like Pan American Silver. My gosh, fabulous rally. And it's getting very overbought. Also, we have a model called the inverse springboard, and it is giving a sell signal now. So Pan American Silver has been outstanding rally in the sector, and the leading item, it's worthwhile following it, and it's now giving excessive technical reading. So somewhere within the next week or so, it should roll over. We're also getting not quite the same readings, but not as strong, but similar readings in Standard & Poor's. I like to follow the NYA. That's the whole New York Stock Exchange composite, the whole broad market. And it's up there as well. So the question is now, you've registered some excessive technical readings on the upside at about a time when it was likely. So you adjust your portfolio accordingly. And what we're looking for here on the stock market would be an end to one of the features, which is the phony uptick close. I think that's evidence of the hand of policymakers trying to make the market look more attractive than it is. And it doesn't cost you it costs you a lot of money to hold the market up all day long. It costs you a lot less to do a phony uptick close. Well, yesterday didn't have the phony uptick close on volume. So, and so on the S&P or the NYA, when you've got these signals, we then wait for the on a weekly basis to have a lower low than the previous week's low. We're not there yet. That then sort of says that everybody's in and you're getting the working on a trend change. And that would hold for the very hot precious metal stocks as well. They're on the big ones, you know, smaller stocks are pretty volatile, but the big ones like Pan American Silver, the first week with a lower low would say that the best of the move is in. And gosh, it certainly has been a change in the market, Chris, from the terrible gloom of last December, January. Now, where we stood on this, on the bigger picture, was beginning in November, we put together a couple of studies that argued that the next low, when it came in, would be or could be a cyclical low, end of the cyclical bear, and the beginning of the cyclical bull. And, yeah, very convincing rally when it took off. And you've got the Huey. I think the low was 99, and the high was something like 210. So it's been outstanding. So here was the other thing, Chris. So look back on the terrible stock market in 2001, and it came under the pressures, and that drove down the precious metal stock prices. And then you had in 2001, I guess it was, and then also 2008 under that hit. But in each of those cases, the precious metal side stocks had their disaster bottomed and rebounded and enjoyed a fabulous rebound, quite like this one, before the big stock market had bottomed. So let's just look at 2008. I think it was October or November that the gold stocks bottomed and did a huge rally. And then it went down and had another test. But the, of course, as we all know, that problematic market didn't end until March when all of the downside forces cleared. So I think what we're going to get here now on the gold stocks is a correction. And on the base metal side, which has been a terrific party as well, it's not going to be too friendly, I think. So where the gold sector can have a correction on back down, you know, I don't know what level. We'd have to do some technical work there to figure it out. But I think that the base metal side can go right back down and test the lows of January. So we're not quite out of the woods on commodities. Now, this week in commodities, of course, you had a natural rebound in crude oil up to the 43 level, and then it corrected back a bit, and then it rallied up going into the big Doha meeting over the weekend. I think it was on Sunday. So it would be natural that the market would go up into the meeting and go down after the meeting, and crude oil did sell off on Monday morning down to 39, and I thought, oh yeah, that's nice. And it's been following the moving average down. So it had done a nice top and was rolling over. And then all of a sudden, there was a huge bid came into the crude oil market, plus probably other commodities, and did a spectacular rally right up to 43 and change, which seems to be matching, you know, pretty close to the previous high. So, and other commodities responded. So actually we're read one professional trader's view here this morning that the government, central banks, who are all concerned that if you've had for ages central bank presence in the credit markets pushing interest rates this way and mainly down, then in the last decade it's gradually come out that they have been working the stock markets as well. And it's no big step to consider that they would then start to try and influence the commodity prices. So, but I think in commodities, such influence might be short-lived. We've been very overbought at what could be when you would expect to have commodities firm in this season, you know, March, April, May, somewhere in here. And you've also had a terrific narrowing of credit spreads. Junk spreads relative to treasuries widened right out to beyond 20% in the problems into January, and one would expect a correction. And it keeps correcting. We're down into the 16s now on that one, a spread. It's come in a long ways, again, tied to commodities. So everything at the moment is up and looking good, and people are excited and happy as can be, but it's at a time that this was likely, and this is how our methods work, is you, yeah, sometimes it's seasonal, sometimes it's historical, and you'd look for there's going to be a high. We got the high, and then the other one is, are there technical excesses? And yes, there are, so then we just sort of wait patiently for the whole thing to roll over. And as I said, in the precious metal side, it would be a correction within a new cyclical bull market. And on the ordinary commodity side, it would be, it's been an important rally, but it needs to go down and have a test before one can say that the bear market in commodities that started in 2011 is over. So, Chris, we do live in interesting times.
Thank you for that comprehensive overview. I keep hearing from the blogosphere mongers that the stock market big rally since 2008-2009 nadir has reached its zenith and it's all over. From merely a technical vantage point, we've just put in a remarkable double bottom, or what some people refer to as a W bottom. It could potentially, theoretically, lead to new highs in the years ahead.
All I know is it's up when it should be, and it's showing signs of excess. So one has to figure that in the next couple of weeks or so, we get a week where the S&P has a lower low the week before, then the next downtrend comes in. The central bankers are identifying now with commodities that puts them in yet even more riskier condition. Because the central bank should not be identified with any move in any item, either bonds or stocks or now commodities, because these things are ultimately outside of their control and will work against what central bankers want to do. It's all a belief system. Mainly Wall Street and certainly academic life, anything that happens is due to policy changes, and that's not the case because... Oh, yeah, that's what I was talking about earlier, going back to Roman times. There's evidence that policymakers, governments, respond to market forces. And I have no reason to say that that's any different, but on the near term, they can appear, like this week, with Monday's turnaround in crude oil, they appear to be momentarily successful. But we were just take these things, Chris, on a month-to-month basis. Stock markets, commodities, precious metals are up when they should be and are showing signs of speculation.
I'd like to move on to the precious metals. We read this week that China is pricing gold in terms of yuan, and there's some speculation that this could lead to even a pegging of the yuan to gold later on, and maybe even further cornering of the yellow metal.
Yeah, I read that, and I thought it was, I think it's a good step. I'd like to look at it where you've had these market points, London, Zurich, where they actually did deal with metal. And there's one more. Now it's going to be in China. I think it's a good thing. I don't know that they're out to corner gold. You can have a gold standard without cornering the metal. You just say, okay, here's our point where we will buy and sell gold at this fixed point against this currency. It's been done before. In 1875, the outgoing Grant administration, with a letter, told the Treasury to go back to redeeming currency for gold. And that was, I think, sometime in 1878. And they had a gold market, I think, in New York, Philadelphia, and the New Orleans. There was great concerns going into that date that there wouldn't be enough gold in the Treasury. And because there was belief in the that the government would meet its obligations, then nobody wanted to own gold. So there was more gold came in and currency went out. So this move in China is probably sound and probably a good idea, but it doesn't, to my mind, represent an urge to corner or control gold. They're just going to have a more liquid market, I guess, for the bullion, which is very constructive for gold's history.
I'd like to move on to the Deutsche Bank confession recently, gold and silver rigging. Apparently, officials at Deutsche Bank decided to take on the onus of a confession.
A medieval confession where they were given the equivalent of being racked on the wheel, facing the burning at the stake, so they confessed to whatever their masters wanted to hear. Now, anybody who's been around the gold business for a while would know that on even when London was the market and there was no futures price, there would usually be a couple of dealers who, on any move, would force it to squeeze the shorts or squeeze the longs, whichever way you're going. They'd always like to take the move to an extra bit as far as they could go. So, and it's like they got confessions out of guys for setting a market for LIBOR. And it was always sort of an agreement. Okay, well, that's what we're going to call LIBOR. Okay, well, that's what we're going to call the price of gold at the end of the day. So these are medieval confessions, and I don't think any less of Deutsche Bank on this regard. I think a great deal less of them because they went wild with borrowing, and just take a look at what their stock's been doing. And I think that has very little, that plunge in their stock into January had very little to do with what they were doing in the gold market, more what they were doing in the loans market. So, no, it satisfies the need in the gold and silver community to have a conspiracy, because, you know, my saying on forecasting, and back in the day when you'd get a recession, nothing happens unless central bank causes. So back in those days, they believed that a central bank caused the recession to cure inflation. But then they'd get too severe a recession, so it was called an overshoot of policy. Then you have the macroeconomists, and they have a wonderful little phrase called exogenity. So exogenity is something that comes from outside of their modeling process. You got the big central bankers, the big guys in the gold business, and you know how you establish fame as a gold guru. All you have to do is say it's going to go to $10,000 and you're famous. Our research hasn't sought fame. Chris, we haven't even sought by saying it's going to go to $5,000. But at any rate, whenever a gold bug or silver bug's forecast doesn't work out, immediately it's a conspiracy that some government agent is somehow smart enough to thwart their forecast.
I'd like to direct the discussion a bit to this $10,000 figure, because one of our favorites here on the show, Dr. Lieb, recently announced his forecast for $10,000 to $20,000 gold. He claims that one of the reasons behind that will be China, due to just insatiable demand, cornering the market at some point to, as we were discussing earlier, to fix the yuan on a more stable basis. So instead of pegging it to the U.S. dollar, or oil for that matter, which they have in limited quantities, access in limited quantities, except their neighbor to the north, what they would do is go for the yellow metal. And you're not so keen on that idea.
Well, there's no rational way that any researcher can come up with a number of $10,000. But what you can do, if you've done your research and homework, is notice that on every Great Depression, well, four out of five of them since central banking started in 1694. And in terms of the senior currency, the real price of gold goes down during a big boom, and then it goes up in the following contraction. And this was one of the fascinating things that I found when doing the numbers back in 1980, was that on four out of five Great Depressions, in senior currency terms, the real price of gold went up by 1.7 times. Well, it was sort of like 1.69, but I rounded it out. So this is what we're looking for, and it can be rationally determined that on this depression cycle, the real price of gold could go up by 1.7 times. Now, to pull a number like 10,000 or 20,000 out of the air, is that it's pulling it out of air.
But I think what many of our sharp guests as well on the show would concur with is that they're looking at several factors at play. They're looking at a devaluation of the global currency system with dollar hegemony under attack. As John Williams here from ShadowStats.com points out regularly, one divided by zero is infinity. That's just the monetary. Then let's look at the fact that since 1980, we've had more than a doubling of the world's populace. Since 1980, access to gold has gone up maybe a hundredfold to many areas of the world, from Russia, China, former communist bloc countries. Transportation has vastly reduced the cost of sending and shipping metals. You know, you can have an eBay gold and silver shipping business that can ship metals around the world to Singapore, Taiwan, Tahiti, Papua Nui, to the Easter Island. There are some factors at play that indicate we may not see an exact 1980 or 1929 style replay, but there could be a confluence of events that lead to extraordinary times that you started off the show with.
Okay, well, let's go back to 1928-29, and one of the reasons for the bull market in stocks then was that the end of the experiment in socialism in many countries in Eastern Europe and even in the United States, this would free up markets, and you'd have a whole lot of new retail people. So that's an old story. Gold is money. No matter what the Keynesians say, gold is money. And the purchasing power of money changes. And when you're in the long expansion, the dynamic expansion of the economy, with rising commodity prices, and this is the part that many gold and silver bugs miss, is that the increased demand for their favorite metal, whether it's gold or silver, and also mixed with currency depreciation, it's not going to affect any other commodity. It's sort of an isolated world if you're a silver bug or a gold bug, and the evil central bank is going to depreciate the currency, and gold's going to go to 10,000. Now, what happens if crude oil goes to the equivalent of 20,000? And crude oil represents energy. You got to have blasting agents and tires and power and all that sort of stuff. So you could have crude oil or gold going to 10,000, but if your costs of mining it are going to 20,000, or the equivalent, you're not going to make any money.
But wouldn't that then be a self-reinforcing process? If those costs did go to the moon, as you say, then suddenly the mines shut down because they can't afford to sell their product. They can't mine their product, as we've seen here over the last 5 months. That leads to a supply issue and concern, which becomes an even stronger reinforcing process. Plus, we know that mining is a very energy-intensive, and then refining even more energy-intensive process. When you combine those processes, then you have a self-reinforcing eruption in the price of precious metals.
Well, I think it was around 2005 where the gold bugs had everything going. Weak U.S. dollar, a rising gold price. But, hey, energy costs were going up and the gold mining business wasn't making any money. So this comes in on a business cycle basis. And you go back to what we do. You go from oversold to overbought. But just consider this, that through hundreds of years and wars and shortages and climate change and weather change and everything else, that on 4 out of 5 Great Depressions, the real price of gold went up by 1.7 times. The gold mining business was very profitable in a depression when other businesses were not profitable. And as a matter of fact, you've had the greatest gold rushes in history at or close to the end of a Great Depression when there were two things that prompted a gold rush. One, the real price of gold was very high. Two, employment was very low. Unemployment was very high. So guys went out and looked for gold. And this is as regular as you can get. So one doesn't need to have a forecast of 10,000 or 20,000. All one needs is a bit of history that says that you're in a Great Depression, gold mining is going to become the premier industry.
We're both such history aficionados, and that's why I appreciate your perspective, because you've spun around the sun many more times than have I. But the statistics you're looking at are sound, but a bit skewed. There's some kurtosis in the statistical analysis. We're missing some really key anomalies in the data, and I'd like to interject a few. I mean, firstly, we have, of course, the over-quoted Weimar, the recent Zimbabwe. We have much of South, if not all of South and Central America. And then we even have gold skyrocketing 100% in terms of rubles as the oil market crashed, careened out of control just about a year ago. We have some recent, very recent examples. Venezuela is another excellent example. The former communist bloc nations. Hungary actually holds the world record for inflation.
Oh, the pango. I know. When you get huge paper inflation like the Weimar, you had virtually no credit market there, and they could go straight to printing, and we've all seen pictures of the wheelbarrows and that sort of stuff. But for consistency in research, you have to stay with the senior economy and the senior currency. And all I'm saying is that the record is that in the Great Depressions, the real price of gold was up. And it makes the gold mining the premier industry. And that's not only sufficient, but it's necessary information. You don't need forecasts of $10,000 or $20,000 gold. That's fanciful stuff.
Anything over 100% is just unnecessary, because these things occur one step at a time. We're not going to wake up tomorrow with $2,000 gold, $5,000 the next day, $10,000. If we want to speak hypothetically or theoretically, that makes sense. But I'm with you. We need to stick with the empirical facts. And history does not support a global gold eruption of enormous proportions. So it puts the onus of responsibility on the shoulders of people who just haven't done their homework. And it also, I think, discourages people from having a diversified portfolio, which is the hallmark of investing success. Increasing one's weight in the precious metals sector, not a bad idea considering the 5-year bear market we've been in. Would you agree with that?
You'd want, anybody should own some gold as insurance. When you're evaluating it in dollars, Canadian, U.S. dollars, or euros, or pangos, you're then becoming a currency trader. An investor in the precious metals sector will look at the stocks and look at whether the company is going to make any money or not. And then you add that up with our historical view that in the Great Depressions, the gold mining industry has made a lot of money. It's the only industry that you can predict will make money during a Great Depression. So that, you know, Chris, we don't need to know anything more than that.
Incidentally, how is the view? I think you mentioned you moved into a condo.
Actually, I was just closing the curtains because the sun was coming in. But I'm right on the Pacific Ocean here. I look south into the Washington State, and not clear enough to see them today, but there's a range of mountains there on the Olympic Peninsula. So I got out my map, did the scale, and it's 100 miles away. Now I can see in Washington State Mount Baker. Now that is a dormant volcano, and it's much higher elevation. And it's 80 miles away, so it's, I love the view, Chris.
Given the circumference of the Earth being round and whatnot, you've just proven what Galileo proved.
What sailors knew from time immemorial. You're talking to someone who, when I was doing my degree in physics, had vaguely heard about a flat Earth society. And this was back in the 60s, and you could get membership in this if you could do a paper in physics that was absolute nonsense. They had this Flat Earth Society, and one of its ambitions was to bring up for debate at the United Nations General Assembly that the United Nations should build a wall around the edge of the world to prevent the ships from falling off. The response was, well, of course, the United Nations has debated a whole lot more sillier things than that. But, Chris, I'll leave you with the motto from the Flat Earth Society. We are on the level.
Thank you.
Okay, anytime.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves. Industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garnero, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. And founding director, their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Welcome back, Peter Grandage.
Glad to be here.
It's a cliche now, may you never live in interesting times, and we're certainly seeing that. A stock market that can gyrate 1,500 to 2,000 points in just a month or two. We haven't seen anything like that since the bottom of 2008, 2009, and the top of the year 2000 internet bubble. Plus gold, at least from the beginning of the year, another big stampede out of the gate, and now we're consolidating a bit.
I think what we've seen, at least from hindsight being 2020, is if I knew for certain or near certain, I'd be making this call for my series of islands. So I want to be clear, I don't really know for certain, but there's a conflict in the equity market. On one hand, I think even the most bullish ardent would say that fundamentals suggest the market is pricey. The market is going to witness and is witnessing a decline in corporate earnings. And many of the things that normally in past economic cycles would be negatives for general equities. However, and that's a cop-out word, but however, nevertheless, we are also, in a sense, groomed and also become addicted to the belief that so long as monetary policy is easy and interest rates remain low, that's extremely beneficial for equities. And that's really what propelled the last rally when it became apparent that the fear of a dramatic rise in interest rates was not going to happen. And recent past experience in the last several years of so long as the Fed is not raising rates, it's good for equities, drove not only new money into the market, but really a dramatic short position that was taken at the beginning of the year, betting on the fundamental argument, really helped get the market equities back to where it is. On the gold side, I think really, if you look at the news from just a few years ago till now, just about everybody seemingly had given up on it. Everybody had predicted its demise or its clear evident was heading below 1,000. And when that didn't happen and some of the fundamentals started to kick in because we've had such a several years now of not a lot of money going into exploration for new production, clearly concerns worldwide, maybe people more concerned about fundamentals out than in the United States, drove people or at least a certain amount of people back into gold. And it had really been sold completely out. I mean, anybody who wanted to sell had sold by then. So two markets that have both moved up in this year, but I think one is in its last leg, which is the equities, and one which is in its new leg is the gold market.
That's interesting because, you know, there's been so many people calling the top in stocks now over the last several years, and every time a new top is called, equities just come roaring right back, and we're above that weekly 50-period moving average once again. Valuations are just simply out of control. The only other time I remember anything like this was the year 2000 peak, where Ask Jeeves and Red Hat priced to perfection to infinity valuations. When do U.S. equities actually reflect value?
Well, I think the first thing is to understand that while we're certainly up from the lows that we began the year with, in a net regard, we've really gone nowhere. We're flat for the year. In fact, if we go back to before the last financial crisis, equities have actually been a losing proposition because after you take in purchasing power loss, they're actually slightly down. But again, because the latest hurrah has been to the upside, it looks like, you know, they've been profitable. I think the mistake, and I've made so many of them, but I think the mistake that some of us who have not been roaring bullish has made is to keep comparing everything that happens in this market to what used to happen in past markets. I think the game has changed. The players have changed. First of all, we have robots and algorithms and all these other things that didn't exist 10, 20, 30 years ago. We have certainly an unbelievable change in monetary policy that didn't exist beforehand. So maybe if there's one error and if we had to do it over, we unwind that. But I still think, I really do, that in the long, long, long run, stock market becomes what it was originally set up to be, and that's a place where you can buy and sell pot ownership in businesses. And those businesses, most of them, will do well and not so well if the economy is doing well and not so well. And I don't think there's much of a doubt that the economy outside of a very narrow, focused group of people has not performed well. So inevitably, hopefully, the weight of reality overwhelms the unbelievable, don't worry, be happy atmosphere that we've been in for quite a while. And eventually, people say, listen, it's not worth paying up for this anymore because there's nothing left to make it another extension. And I think in part that's what's happened. That's why I think the market has been flat overall despite these volatile times. but there's not yet anything for where people are going to sell it off and stay out of it yet because the monetary positions are not causing them to take that position.
Obviously, at least on paper, a technical recovery with unemployment dropping under 5%, at least if we believe their numbers and we don't discount for inflation and we don't adjust the GDP and we believe the hedonics. I mean, there has been a pseudo economic recovery, and that was enough to keep funds flooding in, stocks going on both sides of not only the Pacific, the Atlantic. They were in search of better returns. That certainly boosted the United States buybacks here as well in the U.S. Eventually, investors are going to be stuck with a really crummy hand. Let's talk about diversification. Let's talk about a better hand. Five of a kind. Gold and silver. Unloved assets for almost 5 years. Give us your thoughts here, please.
I think we went through such a dire bear market for multiple years across the wide spectrum, not just in the physical market, but everything related to it, mining shares, exploration shares, last one out, turn out the lights kind of a feeling, and it was for such a long sustained time that the first evidence that the worst was over is we run out of sellers. That's what happened. There was no one left to sell. You know, we then got a little bit of a boost. There started to be a belief that the interest rates weren't going to go up as much as people feared. That gave a little softness to the dollar. That gave some, at least maybe initially, some short started to cover. And then we've seen some, you know, substantial physical buy-in. And again, because it's not beneficial for people who sell financial assets, which is 99% of the financial world, to look for gold to go up, they're just not going to look and talk about the benefits for what's shaping up for gold. But one of the things that is shaping up is that on a relative value basis compared to equities and even bonds, gold has historically now offered some real value. And it clearly is minimally something that for decades, as long as I was around, it was said all the time. It's clearly cheap insurance. At the very minimum, even if you're an equity lover, you buy it just like you buy home insurance and fire insurance and pray to God you never have to go pull out the policy and call the insurance agent. So I think for one reason, and that alone, we saw buying. But I do believe there's a shift now. I do believe there's some serious, not only central bank interest, but large institutional and retail interest. And we can see that when it corrects, it doesn't get whacked and stay down that the way it had been for quite a while. And I think that's a sign that not only is selling exhausting, but people are willing to buy, especially if there's a little dip in the price.
You know, you're also a technician. You don't just look at the fundamentals. Any support levels, any resistance levels that come to mind, we're watching, for instance, 1200 in gold as good, solid support. We'd like to see a breakout above 1400 as a sign of a resumption of the bull market. Silver, we'd love to see hold 1415 and then a break above 1850 on to 2021. Any thoughts?
I think that technical analysis tends, especially now because we have such a huge amount of pools of money, can become self-fulfilling prophecies if enough people place a point or a line and say if that happens, this means something. It's clear psychologically that if you can get a market above a price that seemingly was difficult for gold, it's a little bit above 1300. I don't follow silver as closely, so I don't know the actual technical points. But let's face facts. We're not going to have a bull market in gold and not one in silver and vice versa. So if I was just a silver bull, I think it would be beneficial if gold can get above and stay above 1300. I would say that's probably, from a technical standpoint, one of the things. From the people on the shorter term, there's so much manipulation in it now, and it's why it's, and, you know, these computer-driven things, it's hard to sit there as an individual and think you can point that out. But I still say that it would be most beneficial for gold to get above 1300. I think any remnants of people still saying it's a bear market rally would be removed if and when something like that happens.
You know, I agree with you, and I think that most of these algorithms we've talked about for years, and actually I've been heavily involved with, shorter term in nature, I don't think have a substantial impact on the longer themes in the market, which I think gives us, as longer term focused investors, a edge over people who want to trade in and out of these markets. I like the idea that you issued to your subscriber base in maybe the end of last year or early this year, where you said, I've come to the conclusion that really building a strong portfolio, diversified portfolio, is the way to go almost invariably. And so maybe now would be a great time to overweight or increase the exposure to precious metals.
Well, Jerry Dines had a great saying for years. He used to say that market timing is very, and that's what happens with market timing. You know, if you just missed by a day or two, it can mean missing the whole move of a market. I agree. Diversification is key. I think earlier you made a point that I wanted to respond to, and I think it could tie into this, and that is you made a very good point. Outside the U.S., particularly North America, we've seen nothing short of some disasters in equity markets. And I think that helped the U.S. because they felt they had to be somewhere. But eventually, if that continues, inevitably their valuations will become so cheap compared to ours that you'll see a shift. I don't know if we're there yet. I don't track that on a daily basis. But that could be another part of what eventually brings this equity market to a halt and actually turn down, because, you know, as a fund manager, you sit and go, okay, I like companies, okay, and then I see this company in Germany or South America, and I see its revenue base and this and that, and a PE of 8, and I see a very similar competitor in the U.S. at 18 or 28, there'll be a shift. That will be the diversification. So if I was starting a portfolio today, I'm not here and or securities licensed to tell people what to do, but for me personally, my portfolio would be heavily weighted now outside of the U.S. I think going forward, I think there's far less risk in some of those markets than there still remains in the U.S. market.
Our recent guest, Jim Rogers, certainly concurs with your sentiments. I mean, it's almost a mantra. He is saying, look at Russia, look at some other nations outside the U.S. You know, he loves the ruble. He loves the Russian stock market that's just been decimated. A lot of our guests are looking for crude oil to find a bottom in the next few months. Monty Guild and his team over there, Guild Investments, and many others would like to see a solid bottom, the precious metals as well. All bear markets eventually come to an end unless it's a stock which goes out of business. You know, the metals can't exactly go out of business. Well, Peter Grandich with Peter Grandich and Company. He's been on the show now for a decade. It's a real pleasure to have him back.
Glad to be here.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity. Brazil Resources, based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves. Industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. And founding director, their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposit. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
This is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. There has been a lot of discussion this week on the implications of the recent lawsuit settlement by Deutsche Bank over allegations it manipulated gold and silver prices. A Bloomberg article disclosed Deutsche Bank also agreed to help the plaintiffs in this matter pursue similar claims against other banks as part of the settlement. In addition, the bank will turn over instant messages and other communications to help further the plaintiff's case. So far, only Deutsche Bank has reached a settlement. Five other banks were also named in the lawsuit. This may grow legs and turn into something spectacular, like a tobacco-style settlement. But then again, it may not. The myth of no gold and silver manipulation is a fairy tale that can no longer be supported. This lawsuit and any negotiated legal settlement may ultimately be designed as window dressing to compartmentalize the idea of, yes, there was precious metals manipulation after all, but it's been rooted out, and now we can close that chapter and that line of thinking, and prevent a wider and more systemic discussion and investigation into, dare we say, organized price suppression on behalf of central banks and a strong dollar policy. I'd like to take you back in time to April of 2008 at the GATA Goes to Washington conference, where the late Adrian Douglas spoke on this very subject. From my April 2008 Goldseek commentary, I said, Adrian showed a chart that directly relates the introduction of the strong dollar policy to the severe downturn in gold from 1995 through 2001. He calls this Exhibit A in the gold price suppression scheme. According to the research done by several speakers at the GATA conference, the gold suppression scheme began during the Clinton administration in 1994 with Secretary of the Treasury Robert Rubin and his undefined strong dollar policy. That's some of the historical context of gold price suppression. At the bottom of the Bloomberg article, it actually provides the case number for the United States District Court, Southern District of New York. Downloading and reading 200-page lawsuits is something more people interested in this space should do. There are documents listed for both the silver litigation and gold litigation. This is really important stuff, because for all the years this intervention has taken place, free markets, investments, companies, and people's lives have been delayed, shattered, and in some cases, ruined. There has been a massive misinformation campaign against anyone who has dared to educate the public about the facts of market manipulation. It exists. It has existed. It has required those with lateral thinking skills and unique analytical skills to forge ahead, despite the annoying conspiracy theorist rhetoric. Well, let me say this loud and clear. The conspiracy is no longer a theory. In fact, it never was. It is, was, and always has been a fact. The charts and graphs in these legal documents are quite educational and worth reading for anyone who has an interest in really delving into this matter and understanding it from an organic level. Back in 2008, I commented on how market manipulation negatively impacts technical analysis and makes markets counterintuitive. Let's say you're in a blackjack game and you know how to count cards. In other words, you know how to determine the probability that certain cards will be dealt as the game progresses. Call it a form of technical analysis. Counting cards doesn't mean you're going to win. It simply means you bet according to the probability of what might happen. It's an educated guess. Now let's say, unbeknownst to the players, the dealer in that game is cheating. He's doing false shuffles and occasionally dealing from the bottom of the deck. When you've got a dealer that is cheating, it renders your technical analysis obsolete. It makes the game counterintuitive. You start second-guessing yourself and the fundamentals, because you never know when the dealer is going to pull his next sleight of hand. But the good news is you eventually have to change dealers and/or the players, i.e. the investors, start to figure out something is terribly wrong. And isn't that what's happening in the market today? People are beginning to wake up and realize that all is not as it appears to be. And it's been a long road, with a lot of destruction, a lot of financial loss, and personal loss. It's not just the value of the gold and silver that was manipulated. It was people's lives and their destinies, their families, the cost of settling the losses and collateral damage of gold and silver price manipulation is gargantuan. I am reposting the videos of Bill Murphy from GATA in 2010 at the CFTC hearings that I posted on YouTube, where he originally unveiled details about gold price suppression and was met with what I will call suppression deniers from every corner. It's worth watching again to know what an unwavering advocate gold and silver have had with Bill Murphy and Chris Powell for so many years. Whatever comes of this Deutsche Bank settlement and any other negotiated settlements that result from it may be the only official resolution that comes into the public spotlight on the gold and silver suppression issue. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.